I'd like you to take your Bibles, please, and open it to Genesis chapter 13. So Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. The Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." Lot looked up and saw the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt toward Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out toward the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, "Lift up your eyes from where you are and look north and south, east and west. All the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you." So Abram moved his tents and went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he built an altar to the Lord. You may be seated. Many years ago, though not as many as it should be, I made a number of bad decisions in purchasing things that I or we could ill afford. I had gotten us into debt with credit cards and couldn't pay them off at the end of the month, and so I had to make monthly payments on them. So large was that payment that on paper, I could not see how the payment could possibly be made unless the money was taken from somewhere else. And the easiest place from which to take that money was from our weekly giving to the church. I rationalized at the time, I thought rather wisely, that it would be wrong for me to be giving money away when I owed people money. And so for several months, over my wife's objections, I didn't give anything to the church, to the work of God's kingdom. Surprising to me, but probably not to many of you, nothing, however, changed in my financial condition. I was still unable to meet the obligations that I had. We didn't get ahead. During that time, I was wrestling with God about whether or not to trust him, because I had been taught all of my life, and many around me were saying, that if we would simply trust God, even with our finances, God would provide. If we would obey him, he would provide. That didn't make sense to me. It's not logical. There were only so many dollars coming in, and when you added up the obligations, there was nothing left over. I thought it would be presumptuous to expect some kind of miracle to get me out of that jam. Finally, at my wife's cautious prompting, I made the decision to trust God and simply give, even though I couldn't afford it. Now, it doesn't take most of you much imagination to guess what happened. When I trusted God with the finances, I not only found that we were increasingly moving out of debt, but I also found that we in the process were more disciplined. At least I was. I was the one that got us there in the first place. Faith and obedience. Faith and obedience came before the solution. When I stopped focusing on protecting and started focusing on giving, the situation resolved itself. An open-handedness with our money is a faith issue. Do we trust God enough to provide for us if we are obedient to him? An open-handedness with our lives, A willingness to let God direct our lives wherever He chooses to direct them is a faith issue. Do I truly trust Him with my life? You know, it seems easier for many of us to trust God to forgive our sins here and now than to take care of our finances. It seems easier for us to trust that God will take us to heaven when we die than to trust Him to truly direct us for our good in our lives here and now. Abram, the principal character of the Old Testament incident that we've already read about, was a man who was learning about faith. That is, God was in the process of growing that man's faith or trust in God. In the early part of chapter 12, which we looked at a couple of different times a few weeks ago, where we first saw Abram, we saw a man who exercises or who takes a fairly great step of faith. He left his country, the security of that country. He left the security of his extended family, and he stepped out to go where God directed him. But when we came to the end of chapter 12, which we looked at last week, we saw that Abram's faith failed. When he was threatened in the land of Egypt, when he looked around and saw that things were not going to go the way he had planned or the way that he had hoped, he took things under his own control. He grabbed a hold of the reins of his life, as it were, at that point in time, and were it not for the grace of God, he would have lost everything. It was a good lesson learned a hard way. God sovereignly intervened in Abram's life and saved not only his life, but even saved his possessions. And so when Abram safely returned to Canaan, as we saw in the beginning of chapter 13, Abram wisely made his way to Bethel. There he worshiped God. But as in our lives, it was not too much longer before Abram's faith was again tested. God does that. Abram had come out of Egypt a very wealthy man. How wealthy was he? In the next chapter of Genesis, we are told that when Abram went to rescue Lot, he not only called together some of his allies in the area, but he put together a posse of 318 men, trained men, who were born in his own household. To give you some sense of how many servants this man had? Apparently, both he and Lot had large herds of cattle that required all of these people to tend them. I get the picture of hundreds, if not thousands, of head of cattle spread out over the pasture lands like the Herefords in South Park, Colorado. Keeping those cattle separated and watered and fed would be a major task, would require a lot of people. Our text tells us that the herds were so large that conflict broke out between Abram's cowboys and Lot's. An acre of grazing land can only support so many head of cattle. When you put too many cattle on an acre of ground or per acre, the grass cannot sustain them. Water was scarce in that part of the world, that part of the country. And again, watering holes could only sustain so many cows. And not only were Abram's and Lot's cattle in the area, but the text tells us there were also Canaanites and Perizzites in the land. They too would have had cattle. Now, I've watched enough old television westerns to have some sense of how this conflict would have developed. The Cartwrights versus the Parkers. A range war is shaping up. And at that point, Abram had a decision to make. Back in chapter 12, verse 1, God said to Abram, I want you to leave your family, I want you to leave your country, and I want you to go to a land that I will show you. In verse 7 of that same text, when Abram first arrived in Canaan, God said to him, Abram, to your offspring I will give this land. God's promise regarding the land was to Abram and his children. It was not to Lot. Abram had every right to protect what was his. In fact, when we saw him, as we did a week ago down in Egypt, we noticed that he was a man who was very much into self-preservation and self-protection. He operated in that mode in Egypt. And once again here, Abram is being threatened. His very livelihood is being threatened. And this time, it's time to act. What does he do? Does he call Lot in for a meeting and tell Lot that it's time for Lot to go to find his own land? Does he bring Lot in and remind Lot that God's promise was to Abram and his children, and Lot therefore should round up his cattle and head off into the sunset? If Abram had been wise, he certainly would have gotten his foreman together and announced
for them that he was going to be talking to Lot in the next week, and they ought to be prepared for that, get their arms, position themselves in the right places so that if Lot resisted, they would be able to drive him and his herds from the land. You need to be prepared for those kinds of things. Is that what he does? No, it's not. Abram's thoughts and Abram's conduct are very different than when he was in Egypt. Something has happened to this man in the weeks, months, maybe it's even been years since he was down there. Something has happened to Abram's trust in God. What Moses, the author of Genesis, does in this account is to set up quite a contrast between Abram and Lot in the way they think and the way they act. There are some television dramas that not only have one plot, but as you're watching it, you realize there are several plots being developed at the same time. That's kind of what Moses does here in Genesis 13. He's developing two things at the same time in this incident between Abram and Lot. First of all, he is using the incident to show us the development of Abram's faith.
Contrary to his experience in Egypt,
his faith is growing in God. Now, he would fail again, but his faith is growing. Secondly, Moses is giving us something of the character of Lot. And he shows us what we will see much more in the next few chapters, and that is here is the beginning of the slide toward the disintegration of his family and of his life. Looking at that contrast a little more, notice who it is that takes the initiative in the conflict. Verse 8, it is Abram who takes the initiative. He says, let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. As I read that, I wondered to myself, where's Lot? Why hasn't he taken the initiative here? Would he have allowed the quarreling to have developed into open warfare between his herdsmen and Abram's? Would he have allowed it to develop even to the point that Abram and Lot themselves were at war relative against relative? Abram is the one who took the initiative for peace, not Lot. Secondly, Abram generously offered Lot the choice of the land. Look at verse 9 of chapter 13. Is not, Abram said, is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. Again, I ask, where was Lot? Wouldn't you have expected him to have immediately said, no, no, Uncle Abram.
This land belongs to you.
You take the first choice. In fact, you take it all. If I need to leave, I'll leave. However you see fit. Not the case. Abram is the one who made the offer of generosity, not Lot. I think in the incident, in the story, verse 9 is the high point of the story. For what we see in verse 9, though it can escape us too easily, is that we see a man who does the unexpected. Here's a man who chose peace and generosity over financial security. Someone could say, well, Abram was a wealthy man. He could afford to be generous. Abram was no fool. Abram could see the very same things that Lot saw. Look what the text says in verse 10 about what Lot observed. Lot looked up and saw the whole plain of the Jordan and that it was well watered like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. The Jordan River watered the area like the Platte River does Nebraska. Abram had heard the stories of the Garden of Eden, of the four rivers and how the land produced crops that were so plenteous. Abram had been in Egypt. He had seen how the river Nile had watered the area, creating great farmland. He could see with his own eyes the Jordan River area. And Abram would know that just as a famine had driven them out of those Judean hills before, so it could drive them out again. My point is this. Abram understood that his very livelihood, he understood that all of those cattle, all of those people who depended on him were dependent on him making wise choices. But in spite of his financial advantage, or at least the advantage that should have been his, Abram does the unexpected. He offered Lot the choice of the land. Why did he do that? Was he a soft-hearted fool? Was he a naive businessman? Was he not as shrewd as he ought to have been? Not the case. He was learning. He was learning to trust God. And what it means is that he did not have to demand his rights. He did not have to protect his possessions. He did not have to tight-fistedly hang on to what was his. He was learning to hold all of his possessions loosely in his hand because he trusted God. Abram chose peace over financial security because he was willing to believe God. When my father reached retirement age a number of years ago, he decided to sell his business to a Christian friend, a young man who was in their church. The only way that young Christian friend could afford to buy the business was if my father would carry the loan so that the friend would make payments to my father. Those payments each month were the bulk of my father's retirement income. It wasn't long before the Christian friend was slow in making his payments and then even missed payments altogether at times. At the same time that Christian friend was buying expensive toys and going on vacations, the man came and wanted to renegotiate the loan with my father for a lower interest rate and lower payments, and my father consented. But the payments were still late on occasion, sometimes even absent. The recommendation from a few who knew what was going on was that my father ought to sue to take back the business. After all, it was his and my mother's livelihood that was at stake. But my father chose peace over financial security. His words were not the same as Abram's, but listen to Abram's words, which reflect it. "Let's not have any quarreling between you and me or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers." My father was able to do that because he truly trusted God. If he hadn't trusted God for financial security, the only logical thing to do would have been to have sued for settlement. Abram was learning to trust God. God had said that Abram's future, and for that matter, the future of the world, was in Canaan, not in a land close by, down there in the plains of Sodom and Gomorrah. Abram had already left the land once, not again. He would stay in the land of promise. As good as that land looked, as secure as it looked, he would not go. He would instead stay and trust God. God had said that Abram's future was in a nation, that is, a people that were so many from himself, that is, his own children, his own family, would grow so large it would be a nation of its own. But it would come from Abram, that nation would. It would not come by integrating with the godless nations around them. A little later in the text, we are told that not only did Lot choose the watered plains of the Jordan River Valley, but he chose the cities that were there as well. Look at verse 12. "Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom." Abram, too, had grown up in the great city of Ur, the New York of the day. Abram, too, had lived in Haran, the crossroads of the Orient. Do you think those cities were as appealing to Abram as they were to Lot? Do you think Abram also saw the advantages of being near those centers of wealth and power? Certainly he did. But Abram was trusting God to provide. I say that with authority because of what the author of Hebrews says about Abram. It's in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 9 and 10. "By faith, Abram made his home in a foreign country. He lived in tents, for he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God." As good as those cities in the plains looked, as secure as they might have made him feel at the moment, Abram would instead stay where God had commanded him and trust God. Now, after Lot left, God came to Abram and encouraged his faith. In the context, it's verses 14 to 16, but in the context, I think we can see the emphasis being something like this. "Abram," God says, "you have trusted me by choosing peace and generosity instead of trusting yourself to provide financial security. Abram, I want you to look around as far as you can see, and I want you to know that someday this land will belong to your family. Abram, I want you to look around. I also want you to realize this, that your family will one day be in number greater than the dust of the ground." Abram could choose peace instead of war with Lot because Abram trusted God for his financial security. Abram chose generosity instead of selfishness because he trusted God with his future. The difference between Lot and Abram is instructive. Lot's motive for separating was prosperity. Abram's motive for separating was peace. Lot looked around himself with eyes of greed. Abram looked around with eyes of faith. Lot saw the well-watered plains of the Jordan River. Abram saw a promise, even though it was not yet fulfilled. Lot located himself in the company of evil. Verse 18, the city of Sodom. Abram located himself in a place of worship. It's verse 18, at the altar of Hebron. And the difference in their actions was based on who they trusted. Lot trusted only what he could see, what he could provide for himself, his own efforts. Abram trusted in God's promise even when he couldn't see it. People of faith are open-handed people. They dare to be open-handed. They dare to give away what they have because their faith is not in what they have. Their faith is in God who provides. People of faith are open-handed also because they have a different perspective on the future. Lot, apparently, could see no further into the future than the thousands of cattle that he had, the silver and gold that he possessed, the well-watered plains of the Jordan, where he could somehow manage to hang on to everything he had and protect it, and so he selfishly chose for himself. Abram could see beyond the years of his own life. Abram could see a future that did not even include him personally. When God told Abram that Abram would one day possess all of this land, and when God told Abram that Abram's family would one day number greater than the dust of the earth, I believe Abram knew full well that that would be fully accomplished only after Abram was dead. And what it means to me is that Abram was willing to give his life for that future. That is, he was no longer living his life only for himself. He was ready to give himself, along with everything he had, for the future that God had in mind. Therefore, everything Abram had, whether it was his money, his energy, his time, was disposable, all available for God's use. His open-handedness in dealing with Lot is, again, because he trusted in God for the present, and he trusted in God for the future as well. It leads me to two concluding questions for us, questions that have been going through my mind all the time as I have studied this. Do I and do we trust God for the present? Do we too find it easier to trust him to forgive us our sins than to trust us for our daily bread? Do we too find it easier to trust him for things that are supposedly going to happen in the by and by than for what's happening right now? Do we trust him enough that we are open-handed with everything we have? But also the second question, do we truly trust him with the future? What about retirement? What about career? What about who you marry? What about that future? Do you truly trust him not only with the now, but do you trust him with the future? Dare we be open-handed with everything we have and everything we are? Will you trust him? He is trustworthy. Bow with me, please, in prayer.